William and the Prize Cat. William and Ginger ambled slowly down the lane. Henry and Douglas had succumbed to a local epidemic of mumps, and so William and Ginger were the only two representatives of the outlaws at large. Suddenly, round a bend in the roadway, they ran into the Hubert Laneites, their rivals and enemies from time immemorial. Hubert Lane, standing in the centre of his little band, smiled fatly at them.
"Hello," he said. "Been to the circus?"
Hubert Lane had a knack of finding out most things about his enemies, and he was well aware that the outlaws had not been to the circus because they had not enough money for their entrance fee.
Circus?" said William carelessly. "Oh, what circus?"
"Why, the one over at Little Marley," said Hubert, slightly deflated.
"Oh, that one," said William, smiling. "Oh, you mean that one? It's not much of a circus, is it?"
Hubert Lane had recourse to heavy sarcasm.
"Oh, no, it takes a much grander circus than that to satisfy you, I suppose."
"Well," said William mysteriously, "I know a jolly sight more about circuses than most people."
The Hubert Laneites laughed mockingly.
"How do you know more about circuses than most people?" challenged Hubert.
William considered this in silence for a moment, then said still more mysteriously, "Wouldn't you like to know?" Hubert eyed him uncertainly. He suspected that William's deep mysteriousness was bluff, and yet he was half impressed by it.
"All right," he said. "You prove it. I'll believe it when you prove it."
"All right," retorted William. "You jolly well wait and see."
Hubert sniggered, but for the present he turned to another subject.
"I'm getting up a cat show tomorrow," he said innocently. "There's a big box of chocolates for the prize. Would you like to bring your cat along?"
The brazen shamelessness of this for a minute took away William's breath. It was well known that Hubert's mother possessed a cat of gigantic proportions, which had won many prizes at shows. That the Hubert Laneites should try to win public prestige for themselves and secure their own box of chocolates by organising a cat show was a piece of assurance worthy of them.
"Like to enter your cat?" repeated Hubert carelessly.
William thought of the scrawny creature who represented the sole feline staff of his household. Hubert thought of it too.
"I suppose it wouldn't have much of a chance," said Hubert at last, with nauseating pity in his voice.
"It would. It's a jolly fine cat," said William indignantly.
"Want to enter it, then?"
said Hubert, satisfied with the cunning that had made William thus court public humiliation. The Brown's cat was the worst-looking cat in the village.
"All right," he said. "I'll put you down. Bring it along this afternoon."
William and Ginger walked dejectedly away. Early that afternoon they set off, William carefully carrying the Brown's cat, brushed till it was in a state bordering on madness, and adorned with a blue bow taken off a boudoir cap of his sister Ethel's, at which it tore furiously in the intervals of scratching William.
"Well, it's got spirit, anyway," said William proudly, "and that ought to count. It's got more spirit than that fat old thing of Hubert's mother's."
As if to corroborate his statement, the cat shot out a paw and gave him a scratch from forehead to chin, then leapt from his arms and fled down the road, still tearing madly at its blue bow.
"There," said Ginger, "now you've gone and done it. Now we've got to go without a cat or not go at all."
William considered these alternatives gloomily.
"And they'll go on, because they know we can't go to the circus," he added.
"Well, what shall we do?" said Ginger. "Let's sit down and wait a bit," said William, "and try and think of a plan. We might find a stray cat bigger than theirs. Let's just sit down and think." Ginger shook his head at William's optimism. They were sitting down on the roadside, their backs to the wood that bordered the road. William turned to look into the wood.
"There's wild cats, anyway," he said. "I bet there's still a few wild cats left in England. I bet they're bigger than his mother's old cat. I shouldn't be a bit surprised if there were some wild cats left in this wood. I'm going to have a look, anyway."
And he was just going to make his way through the hedge when the most amazing thing happened. Out of the wood, gambolling playfully, came a gigantic... Was it a cat? It was certainly near enough to a cat to be called a cat. But it was far from wild. It greeted Ginger and William affectionately, rolling over onto its back and offering itself to be stroked and rubbed. They stared at it in amazement.
"It's a wild cat," said William. "A tame wild cat. Perhaps hunger made it tame. Perhaps it's the last wild cat left in England. Puss, puss, puss." It leapt upon him affectionately. "It's a jolly fine wild cat," he said, stroking it. "And we're jolly lucky to have found a cat like this. Look at it. It knows it belongs to us now." "We better take it to the show," said Ginger. "It's nearly time." So they made a collar for it by tying Ginger's tie loosely round its neck, and a lead by taking a bootlace out of William's boot and attaching it to the tie, and set off towards the Lane's house. The other competitors were all there, holding more or less unwilling exhibits, and in the place of honour was Hubert Lane holding his mother's enormous tabby. But the Lane tabby was a kitten compared with William's wild cat. The assembled competitors stared at it speechlessly as William, with a nonchalant air, took his seat with it amongst them.
That's not a cat," gasped Hubert Lane.
William had, with difficulty, gathered his exhibit upon his knee. He challenged them round its head. "What is it, then?" he said. They had no answer. It was certainly more like a cat than anything. "Of course it's a cat," said William, pursuing his advantage.
"Well, whose is it, then?" said Hubert indignantly. "I bet it's not yours."
"It is mine," said William.
"Well, why have we never seen it before, then?" said Hubert.
"Do you think," said William, "do you think we'd let a valuable cat like this run about all over the place? Let me tell you, this is a specially famous cat that never comes out except to go to shows, and that's won prizes all over the world. Well, I've not got much time, and I've got to get back home, so if our cat's bigger than yours, you better give me the prize now, because this cat's not used to be kept hanging about before being give its prize." The Hubert Laneites sagged visibly, gazing at the monster, who sat calmly on William's knees, rubbing its face against his neck affectionately. Hubert Lane knew when he had met defeat. He took the large box of chocolates on which the Hubert Laneites had meant to feast that afternoon, and, still gaping at the prize winner, handed it to William. The other exhibitors cheered. William put the box of chocolates under his arm and set off leading his exhibit. It was not till they reached the gate that the Hubert Laneites recovered from their stupefaction and yelled as with one accord,
"Who can't afford to go to the circus? Yeah!"
William was still drunk with the pride of possession. "It's a jolly fine wild cat," he said again. "Well, we keep it," said Ginger practically. "In the old barn," said William, "and we'll not tell anyone about it. We'll keep it there and take it out walks in the woods and bring it food from home to eat. Then I vote we send it in for some real cat shows. I bet it'll win a lot of money. I bet it'll make us millionaires. And when I'm a millionaire, I'm going to buy a circus with every sort of animal in the world in it." The mention of the circus rather depressed them, and Ginger, to cheer them up, suggested eating the chocolates. They descended into the ditch and sat there with the prize cat between them. It seemed that the prize cat, too, liked chocolates, and the three of them shared them equally till the box was finished. "Well, it's had its tea now," said Ginger, "so let's take it straight to the old barn for the night." "You don't know that it's had enough," said William. "It might want a bit of something else. We'll take it to the old barn, then you go home and get some food for it." "All right," said Ginger. "I'll bring it what I can find with no one catching me. It'll depend whether the larder window's open." Ginger departed, and William amused himself by playing with his prize cat. It was an excellent playfellow. It made little feints and darts at William. It rolled over on the ground. It growled and pretended to fight him. The time passed on wings till Ginger returned. Ginger's arms were full. Evidently the larder window had been open. He was carrying two buns, half an apple pie, and a piece of cheese. And yet, despite this rich haul, his expression was one of deepest melancholy. He placed the things down absently upon a packing case and said, "I met a boy in the road, and he'd just met a man, and he said that they were looking for a lion cub that had got away from the circus." William's face dropped. They both gazed thoughtfully at the prize cat.
I sort of thought it was a lion cub all the time," said William.
"So did I," said Ginger hastily.
After a long silence, William said, "Well, I suppose we've got to take it back." He spoke as one whose world had crashed about him. Life without the lion cub stretched grey and dark before him, hardly worth living.
"I suppose we've got to," said Ginger. "I suppose it's stealing if we don't, now that we know."
They placed the food before the cub and watched it with melancholy tenderness. It ate the buns, sat on the apple pie, and played football with the piece of cheese.
Then they took up the end of William's bootlace again and set off sorrowfully with it to Little Marley. The proprietor of the circus received the truant with relief and complimented the rescuers on its prompt return. They gazed at it sadly, Ginger replacing his tie and William his bootlace.
"He's a cute little piece, isn't he?" said the proprietor. "Don't appear yet, too young. We're going to lap up tricks like milk soon. Well, I'd better be getting a move on. Early show's just going to begin. Thank you, young sirs."
"I suppose," said William wistfully, "I suppose we couldn't do anything in the show?" The proprietor scratched his head.
"Well, tell you what, I am short-handed, as it happens. We could do with another hand. Just moving things off and on between turns. Care to help with that?"
So deep was their emotion that William broke his bootlace and Ginger nearly throttled himself with his tie.
"I should jolly well think we would," said William.
The Hubert Lanites sat together in the front row. They'd all been to the circus earlier in the week, but they'd come again for this last performance, partly in order to be able to tell the outlaws that they'd been twice, and partly to comfort themselves for the fiasco of their cat show.
"I say," said Hubert Lane to Bertie Franks, "I say, won't old William be mad when we tell him we've been again?"
"Yeah," said Bertie Franks, "yeah, and I say, fancy him having the cheek to say he knew more about circuses than us, and not even been once. We won't half-rag him about it. We won't..."
His voice died away. He stared down into the ring, for there, unmistakably, was William setting out the little tubs on which the performing ponies performed. He rubbed his eyes and looked again. It was William.
"Golly,"
he said faintly. All the Hubert Lanites were staring at William, paralysed with amazement.
"Golly,"
they echoed, and drew another deep breath as Ginger appeared, carrying the chairs on which the clown pretended to do acrobatic feats. Then the circus began. The Hubert Lanites did not see the circus at all. They were staring fascinated at the opening of the tent into which William and Ginger had vanished. After the first turn, they emerged and moved away the little tubs and brought out a lot of letters, which they laid on the ground for the talking horse to spell from. After that turn, William came out alone and held a hoop for Nellie the Wonder Dog to jump through. Not once did the expressions of stupefied amazement fade from the faces of the Hubert Lanites. The next day, they approached William with something of reverence in their expressions.
"I say, William," Hubert said humbly. "Tell us about it, will you?"
"About what?" said William.
"About you helping at the circus."
"Oh, that," said William carelessly. "Oh, I generally help at circuses round about here. I don't always go into the ring like what I did yesterday, but I'm generally in the tent behind, helping with the animals, training them for their tricks, getting them ready and such like. I said I knew a jolly sight more about circuses than what you did, you remember?"
"Yes," said Hubert Lane, still more humbly. "It must be jolly fun, isn't it, William?"
"Oh, it's all right," said William. "It's hard work. And, of course, it's jolly dangerous, training the animals and locking them up for the night and such like."
He walked a few yards with an ostentatious limp and then said,
"The elephant trod on my foot yesterday when I was putting it in its cage."
He touched the scratch that his mother's cat had made.
"The bear gave me this the other night when I was combing it out, ready to go on and do its tricks. It's work not everyone would like to do."
They gazed at him as at a being from another and a higher sphere.
"I say, William," said Bertie Franks, if they want anyone else to help you, you'll give us a chance, won't you?"
"I don't suppose they will," said William. "Besides, this circus has gone now, and I don't know when another's coming. It's dangerous work, you know, but I'm used to it."
And followed by their admiring eyes, he limped elaborately away. He was limping with the other foot this time, but of course, no one noticed that.